Okay, guys. Okay, guys. How you doing, guys? You see who I have here? This is Marvin from Marvin Sports and Life. This is episode 75, guys. The episodes they are piling up. They're piling up. I appreciate you guys. I'm getting great feedback from the community. You guys are loving what I'm doing. You guys see the vision right now. We have here an Orangeburg, South Carolina legend, one of the greatest South Carolina athletes of all time, in my opinion. Woodrow Danzler III, aka we all know him as Woody. Woody is responsible for half of the people in the Orangeburg being Clemson fans, in my opinion. You guys can debate the difference, but this is definitely what I have to say. So before we get started, I'm gonna let Woody tell the people hello, because they all tuning in, they all liking and sharing it. So I'm gonna let Woodrow tell the people hello.
Marvin, man, I appreciate this opportunity to sit down and chat, which is always good to hang out with hometown folks. So, glad to be here. Looking forward to a great conversation. I'm going to let you do what you do, brother.
Okay, man, I appreciate it, brother. I also appreciate you giving me the opportunity. A little small guy, little small town guy like me, getting this podcast started. So we're going to let people know. So where was Woody born at?
Of course, Orangeburg, South Carolina.
Orangeburg, right, South Carolina.
Orangeburg Regional Hospital.
That's okay, okay, saying. Okay. So if you would have somebody, if people, how were you as a child, like elementary school age?
I was a tornado, according to my mama and my teachers. I was one of those kids who was born with a whole lot of energy. I was a high energy kid.
Okay.
So I was that one that would sit down, do your work, and then next thing you know, run around the classroom doing flips and aggravating everybody else. That was me.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So that elementary school age. So, because somebody told me that they told me to make sure I bring this up.
Uh oh. Oh shoot.
Somebody said you had a cheat code because Little League football, you went to Steelers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody said, hey, y'all ran through the Orangeburg League.
That was some fun times. Yeah, man. That was just shoot. That was, you know what that was? That was backyard ball. Whoever
okay.
got the ball, you just get to the end zone. That's what we did.
That's it, man. And well, I must admit, you obviously were the cheat code because they had you, and you made it happen.
Oh, that's back that. That's back when we just basically ran right and left, outside outside right, outside left. That's all. Fastest man
okay.
get to the end.
So you did that in middle school. I got my own question. As you being that small child in elementary school, was it at that time that somebody said, you know what, Woody, or whether you or somebody noticed, you know what, you might be a little bit different athletically?
Not really. I mean, I just kind of noticed that, honestly. I don't know. I would say probably when it first happened that someone said that you might be different is, you know, James Williams. He's a cop there. Him and Papa ran the Orangeburg Track Club for a while. And he was my middle school football coach.
Okay.
He was the one when I was getting ready to leave Brookdale, what it was at the time. You know, it's probably some middle school now, but Brookdale was a middle school when I was in school. And when I left there, he was the one who went to coach Tommy Brown and said, hey, I got your next quarterback coming up. So he might have been that first one to say, hey, this is something special here. But, you know, even before then, I also give credit to my father, where he was always the one who saw the giftings in me. He was actually what he did. You know, I talked about being so high energy. What he did to help me out, he actually put me in martial arts. So that's what got me my start in athletics. You know,
wow.
It taught me discipline. Yeah, it taught me body control. You know, it taught me how to handle different situations. So from there, then I got introduced to football, and, you know, it kind of took off from there.
I did not know. See, now, Woody, now I'm going to tell you something, because, you know, as Woodrow, the legend grows, it's all kind of discrepancies come in the story. So I'm glad you said that, because somebody told me that you went to Howard.
No.
See, I did not know. So you went to Brookdale. You
went
to Brookdale Middle.
Yeah, we used to beat up on Howard and Bennett. I'm sorry. W.J. Clark.
Yeah, I went to Clark.
It wasn't Howard. It was Belleville when I was in school.
Wow, okay, yeah, because I remember Papa Johnson, because Papa Johnson took middle school football very serious. He even took it so seriously. He used to spy at us at Clark. I'm way behind you, but he used to come spy at us and just sit at the top of the parking lot and just look with his binoculars. Okay, so of course, you had middle school at that time. So, Papa Johnson. So at middle school, you pretty much you start noticing you. I saw. Did y'all want to complete offense at Brookdale? Or you just like Woodrow getting the end zone? You see somebody open throw it, just run.
We ran the basic offense. You know, we ran our formation. We would throw the ball a little bit. And another little fact for you that you could put in your trivia question box. We was the only middle school that kicked field goals, and I was a field goal kicker also.
Wow.
Yeah, we were kind of ahead of our time. James was that kind of guy. He was always pushing the envelope. But yeah, we had some ballers at Brookdale at the time. So we did a whole lot of different things. We ran very traditional I formation. We spread out a little every now and then. I throw the ball up and down the field. So yeah, we were pretty complex in middle school, but it was simple.
That's definitely here because middle school, like you said, even when I was in middle school at Clark, even at that point, because we just had a running back, shout out, rest in peace, Terrence Neal, he was just passing everybody. So we just went toss right, toss left.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Toss right, toss left. And every now and then they might throw it, but other than that, toss right, toss left. Yeah. Okay, so you get that Papa Johnson says, Tommy Brown. And let me tell you something about Coach. I didn't get the experience. I should have played. I didn't play all 4 years. I got the experience Coach Tommy Brown as a coach for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Great man. Great man. I wish I'd have had them all four. That's neither here nor there. But so Papa Johnson tells him, all right.
James. Make that. That's James Williams.
Oh, James Williams said, all right, Tommy Brown, we got your next quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So I know how Coach Brown is, because Coach Brown kind of stern. So at what point does Coach Brown actually believe it? Or did he let you give you opportunity as a freshman, or you had to work your way up to that spot?
I had to work my way because I actually started, I was they call it now, four-quarter player. So I was on JV. I started out on JV. We lost every game that year, which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, we had loaded talent, but we lost every game that year. But I was on JV, but I still dressed out on Friday. I still practiced with the team, the varsity team. So it wasn't until my sophomore year, the fourth game of the year, where I came in because we wasn't doing very well on offense. So I came in, brought us back. Matter of fact, we was playing Walterboro in Walterboro.
Okay.
And brought us back to the victory, and I started ever since.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Coach Brown made me earn it. Yeah, he wasn't giving nothing. He made me earn it.
Yeah. I don't know what Coach Brown do right now, but I'm pretty sure Coach Brown is still somewhere. I think he's in Atlanta right now. I'm pretty sure Coach Brown ain't giving nobody nothing right now.
No.
Great man. And that's the best thing. But one thing about everybody said about Coach Brown, I don't want to say this. I don't want to talk about any other coaches. But the one thing about Coach Brown, you knew if you gave Coach Brown your all on the back end, Coach Brown would do his all for you to put you in the position where you needed to be.
Coach Brown, yeah, man, because Coach Brown bought our cliques. He was the reason why we had the jerseys and stuff that we had, because a lot of that stuff was coming out of his pocket. You know, our budget was really small. So, I mean, a lot of that stuff we got, he paid for it.
I believe it.
I mean, but one thing I really, truly enjoyed about Coach Brown was the fact that he taught fundamentals. And he was the one, he'd be in your face, said, if you learn the fundamentals of the game, you know, you could play in any system. So when you came out, one thing you're going to do, you're going to know your fundamentals, and you're going to be the best conditioned athlete ever. I have yet, since I left high school, to be challenged conditionally than I was in high school. When I got to college, it was easy. When I got to the pros, it was easy. Because Coach Brown, the way he trained and conditioned us, you know, it was nothing that could touch it.
Man, I'm trying to tell you, to this day, even though I got to spend Coach Brown for 2 years, and Coach Brown, to this day, we got some respect for you. We still whisper about the drills you used to do, to us. We grown men with kids and all kind of stuff, and we still we just whisper about them. But like, Coach Brown, okay, and also, this is another guy, but this is another thing for the OW guys. I think you could probably say, I'm trying to think, because it might be you or right under you. You probably had the best line in Honorable Wilkerson history.
No.
Probably. So that's
No. I love my boys. I had one lineman who was taller than me, but I still weighed more than him.
Wow.
My offensive line was small, but they were scrappy. And that's why, because before when I got there, we were in the I formation. But when I took over my sophomore year, you know, Coach Norman started playing around because we were so small, we weren't going to push nobody off the line. So that's when he switched our offense from I formation running and, you know, double tights type deal. That's when he switched us to shotgun, no huddle, because our line was so small. But I mean, like I said, they would block their tails off. Like literally, I had my left tackle, Charles Brown, who's a dentist now. He was 5'8", 5'9". The tallest lineman I had was 6'1" or 6'2", Brent Chavis, but he was like 160 pounds. You know,
wait a minute.
John Paul Sibley, you know, these guys, we had some little guys, yeah.
So all those studs like with Big Ewing and Alex Barron and Jose after you.
Yeah.
Oh.
We didn't have none of those guys. That's what I was saying. Where were those guys that we was growing up? You know, we had none of those. Huggy Bear, no, we had none of those guys.
Wow. Okay, so I don't know why I thought those guys was your linemen.
No, sir. Not even close.
Wow. Okay. So now that gives me a whole. Okay, guys. So now we're gonna kill that rumor too in Orangeburg. Woody did not have that line. Like I don't know why. Because I'm far behind.
That's what it is. The time. I mean, it goes by so quickly. You don't realize how much time has passed.
Yeah.
Because actually, Jackie Robinson, he came out a year after me. He actually coached Barron and those guys. He coached those guys, you know, so.
Wow. Okay, so, yes, somebody just put in the chat that was Murdoch line, I think. Okay, so I did not know that. Okay, because actually Jackie Robinson was my coach for 1 year, and Coach Harper was the big brother. He was my coach for 1 year.
Dwayne.
Okay, so. Now the legend grows again, Woody. You just growing your legend more. So now I didn't know you were blocking. You was running with guys who were the same size as you as offensive linemen.
Yeah, but like so I said, doing that was scrappy. They held it down. I ain't gonna take nothing from them. They held it down. I mean, you can imagine a kid that's 5'8", 5'9", blocking 6'7", Richard Seymour. You know he played Little Richmond.
Yes, I remember that.
Played them every year, and they had to deal with him.
He was always a stud.
I mean, yeah. Hey, shoot, New England Hall of Fame. He's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. That's my guy. But I mean, they had to contend with him, and they held their ground. That's what I'm talking about. Those guys, they did their thing, man.
Wow. So I did not know that. Okay. So, wow. Well, now this is my question. So, how was you guys' seasons? Well, back then we were the Big 16. Then, if you guys don't know, Woodrow Danzler is a Bruin. He is the Bruin. I'm a Bruin, so it's gonna be a lot of Bruin love on here tonight on W Bruin. So, y'all was the Big 16 then or not yet?
Yeah, it was Big 16. So we did make playoffs every year, but I mean, we had my junior level. Hold up, let me make sure I don't get in too much trouble. Let me back up. That was my senior year when we had that lineman, because my junior year. We had some size, but we still weren't that big. You know,
you weren't bigger than the guys that came after them.
You know, Justin Dan and those crew, those guys were still there. Shelton Benjamin, not Shelton Benjamin, but he was at my freshman year. Shelton Sistrom, bless his soul. Yeah,
that was my offensive line coach in 2005.
Yeah, okay.
Good. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So, wow. Yeah, center. Wow, man, you're making me feel old now, because man, that's so you actually played with Justin Danner. Justin Danner, yes. Was he ahead of you?
Yeah, he was a year ahead of me. He was 1 year ahead of me.
Okay, yeah, because Justin Danner was my
him and Devron Harper.
Yep.
Yeah, Devron was a year ahead of me. He was a year ahead of me. Him, Pat Sharperson, all those guys were a year ahead of me.
Okay, so how does that feel? Because those guys are great. Everybody's great. All those guys you name are all great. If guys you don't know who he just named, you guys can look him up. Justin Danner, who I think he just became shout out Coach Danner, Coach of the Year. Coach Danner became Coach of the Year.
Okay, I need to check in on that.
Yep, Coach of the Year. You could look up Devron Harper. Look him up. Shelton Benjamin. Look him up. Well, Sistrone, that's my coach. Rest in peace. But those are all the good guys. So how was those guys, you being a sophomore, you taking over, did you earn those guys' respect by your play? How did that go?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I think I earned their respect actually during my freshman year, because that was back when we actually went to Camp Daniels. You know, so the coach took us away. We went out to this place. I don't know. It was like the middle of nowhere. So I was like probably the only freshman there, ninth grader that's out at Camp Daniels, you know. And playing on scout team, you know, you get to earn those guys' respect. So they'll see you can play a little bit. You know, honestly, I had to, because one of the things that my dad taught me is if you're going to do something, you better do it right. So just getting out there having fun, man. I think I garnered their respect then. And then when I finally got actually on varsity my sophomore year, I showed some things in practice. And then especially after that game, that fourth game, I was able to really solidify myself and give them my confidence. So,
Yeah, man.
That's one thing you have to do as a QB. You have to step into that role when it's time to go. And I was able to do that. And, you know, that's like, let's go.
Okay. So at what point you're doing your thing?
Hey, Jazzy, baby.
Yeah, you see. Hey, man, shout out to your nephews, man. They made sure everybody know, and you know I ain't lying, that Woody is their uncle.
Yes, so my babies.
Shout out, Jeff. So at what point, I know it's kind of hard to think of yourself in third person at this point, but we're just talking about because athletics. At what point do you start to become Woody and you start to get the attention of college scouts at the Division I, AA, Division I level? At what point do you start to get their attention?
That I am not exactly sure, because that was one thing that Coach Brown didn't do. So one thing, recruiting wasn't on the magnitude, it wasn't the level that it is right now, you know, with the five-star rating and rivals and all these different things, these kids doing all kind of crazy stuff announcing who they're going to be with, and, you know, reporters reporting on these recruits, all, and, you know, kids in middle school getting all, it wasn't that big of a deal. I mean, recruiting was going on, but it wasn't into the magnitude that it is now. Okay. And what Coach Brown did, he didn't, you know, they would send those letters, the college would send interest letters, and it was simply questionnaires trying to get information. Coach Brown didn't give it to us until we got to our senior year. And that's when I realized, because again, I'm just kind of telling myself, I was a pretty naive kid. I didn't know or really care or even thought about going to college, really. I knew probably an option, but it wasn't something that was on the forefront of my mind. It wasn't until my senior year when Coach Brown started giving me the letters, and then coaches started coming to the games and showing up at practice and, you know, getting phone calls from reporters trying to get insight on what colleges that I'm interested in. You know, it never really crossed my mind until then, you know, so wow. I was kind of oblivious to the entire process. Only school I really knew about was South Carolina State, because it was right there in our backyard.
Wow. So before I continue, I want to make sure I put it on here, because I see EJ put it in. Shout out to Rudy, you know, Rudy that got the barbershop, To the Bone Barbershop, Rudy that cut hair.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure I say Crawford Street legend. You are a Crawford Street legend. Make sure I'll put out there.
Rudy told me, I saw that pop up earlier, Crawford Street. And I'm going to say something then. I saw that pop. Yeah, yes, sir. That's where I live.
Yeah, shout out EJ and shout out Rudy To the Bone Barbershop on
First Sock. That's back in the day, you know, we were real. We played tackle football in the street, concrete streets. That's, you know, and get slammed on the ground and wouldn't get hurt. Nowadays, shoot, kids, right?
Man,
the wind blow too hard, they done.
I hate to say it, but even I'm a generation under you, but they ain't built the same. They ain't built the same. Okay, so Coach Brown, so what, it's kind of hard for me to believe. So he went the senior year. So at no point, even your junior, so is that time, is camps a real popping thing? Or camps are not so popular back then, like the college camps?
Nah, it wasn't that big of a deal either. Camps wasn't like that. I went to maybe one camp, I think 2 years, my freshman year, my sophomore year, Coach Brown sent us to Florence, to a guy, Jerry Nettles' camp, quarterback camp.
Okay.
And that was it. You didn't go to all these college camps. I didn't, if they were in existence, I didn't know anything about them.
So, wow.
Yeah, I think that's something that was new. That was a new, again, that's a new recruiting tool that colleges use now. But nah, it wasn't to that magnitude. Like I said, if they were there, I didn't know anything about them. Only camp I went to was 2 years with Jerry Nettles, and after that, you know, we just went to camp before the season, and we had summer workouts. That was it.
Okay, yeah, because Corey Brown was doing the summer workouts too. Okay, mm-hmm. so your senior year comes now. Corey Brown says, "Does he tell you right before the school starts?" Did she tell you that summer leading into your senior year?
Summer leading in. He's like, okay, and you kind of start going through the process. And that's another thing I loved about him. You know, he didn't put it too much on football. He made sure we had our grades, so we knew what our GPA needed to be, how much we need to make on the SAT. He made sure we took the SAT, you know, our sophomore and junior years to get a taste of it, so we can know what we need, you know, understand what the clearinghouse was, you know, all these different things and these standards that we need to make. If we, you know, if you got a 3.0, all you got to do is make this amount on the SAT to qualify. But if your GPA is lower, you got to make a high. See, all that stuff he taught us, man, it was just unreal. And he's just ahead of his time. Now they got people in the recruiting department at these colleges trying to teach these kids this stuff. But these kids still don't know what that is about. But he made sure we got our grades. I mean, he wouldn't let us come to practice. There were some issues going on in the classroom. He sent us to the teachers after school. So,
let me tell you what. To this day, that's why me and some other people wish that we would have been able to. I'm trying to be careful what I say. Finish with Coach Tommy Brown. I'm going to tell you, Tommy Brown, I can say these guys' names because they don't mind. Shout out to Big B. Shout out to Lonzo Middleton. Guys went on mm-hmm. and played on next level. That's the first time and the only time I've ever seen those men cry when they let Coach Tommy Brown go. Only time I've seen them cry, and that was it.
Shout out to Coach
Tommy. Yep, shout out to Coach Brown. Okay, so he tells you what your GPA need to be. So when did you start getting excited? Did you start telling your parents, your friends, like, okay, guys, I think it's getting real?
Still waiting on that moment. Never happened. Like I said, I'm so simple. I'm trying to tell you, I'm so simple. That stuff never got to me. It was never one of the things that, you know, these kids nowadays, what you gonna do, girl? I want to make the NFL. I want to go to the NBA. You know, all these grand ideas. My idea was, okay, where we meeting up at today? Where we playing ball at? Or where we playing, whatever. What we doing today? You know, where's the bike meeting? We riding our bikes to, you know, that was kind of my thing. Even in high school, you know, what are we doing? Who house we meeting at after school? You know, we're going to hang out, we talk and joke around. You know, that was what it was all about for me. But when it really, I guess, kind of answered the question, when it started to get real for me mm-hmm. was when the coaches started showing up to the practices and started showing up to games, and you know, they're calling me on the phone and they wanted me to come to visit their school. It got real. But for the reason why it got real for me, not for the sake of playing ball, but for the sake of, hey, I got an opportunity to go to college. Because I honestly, if I had to go on my own merit, I wouldn't have been able to afford it. So being able to have a scholarship to know that burden wouldn't be placed on my parents to pay for schooling, you know, that's mm-hmm. what made it real for me. That's what made it exciting for me. You know, and I don't even do excitement. It was just more like taking that pressure off my parents. So I guess sort of to answer your question, that's what made it real for me.
Okay. And so, I guess I'm at a question because I know at that point you are very modest, Woody, but at that point you are Woody Dantzler, Mordor Wilkerson High. So at that point, are the college officers the full scholarship off the gate, or did they start off as partials and they got the full, or were all your scholarship offers full off the gate?
Well, it was, you know, good question. I don't even know about a partial, but no, it was the conversation was around full scholarship to my understanding.
Okay.
So the officers, they came after they talked. We talked on the phone. They come see a couple of games later on in the year. Mm-hmm. You know, the offer started coming. So they were full rides.
You remember the first one? Cause I know it's so many in between. Do you remember the first full scholarship offer you got?
No, I will. I'm gonna say it probably was Clemson. I take that back. I'm gonna tell you my first scholarship offer. I actually do remember what my first scholarship uh-huh. offer was. It was, I think it was my senior year, and it was the first time that they can actually come and visit you in your home.
Okay.
Coach Willie Jeffries
came
and sat down in my thing and said, hey, you need to come to South Carolina State. This, you know, this is where you need to be. You know I have, because he had never called me. He had never reached out. But then finally he showed up at my house and we had a nice little conversation. So I think that I'm going to say that was my first scholarship offer right before my senior year. So,
wow.
Coach Tyler, another legend. Who was definitely a legend. So, and this guy, I'm saying this is no offense to South Carolina State. At that time, like you said, South Carolina State in the backyard, did you think, I know you're very, very modest, but did you think the highest, not highest level, but did you think he was going to go to state until the big boys came?
I'm going to say this, but I'm not going to name no names. I had a good friend of mine. He said, you come to South Carolina State, I'll kill you. He just told me straight out. And if you're listening to that, he hit his, he going to know exactly what I'm talking. He said, you come to South Carolina State, I kid. But what he was saying, well, he's like, man, you know, yeah, you can come here and you would do. He said, but no, he said, you're bigger. Not that anything wrong with state, love state, great school, you know, correct, great people. But, you know, it's just like one of those things of you have someone looking out for you. He's like, no, you need to go. You need to go. So you'll need to come to state, you know. So, but yeah, he said, you come to state, I kid. So he was at state at the time.
So I understand that, because obviously we know you've been on the break all kind of records, so we know. I think everybody know. Like I said, I think you just being such a great and humble guy you are, but everybody around you, I give you a perfect example with it. Today, my son is 7 years old, and so you know his quarterback's not Lamar Jackson. Yeah. So I said, son, I'm doing a interview today of an Orange Bowl legend named Woodrow Danzler. He said, well, Dad, he played quarterback? I said, yes. I showed him your highlight reel. And he was like, he from Orangeburg? And I said, yes, son. And so I'm like, you were just ahead of your time. I'm going to get to that later. You ahead of your time. Okay, so what made you choose Clemson throughout the process?
I love telling this story because it's – all the coaches I've spoken with, you know, the visits I went on, unofficial, official, and the conversations I had on the phone, you know, like I said, I still didn't know. I don't know anything about these guys. I didn't know much about Carolina either. I mean, Carolina's right there in Columbia, but I didn't know nothing about them. So when it came down to it and it was time to make a decision, well, actually, I didn't know if it was time to make a decision, but when I decided to make my decision, I decided to go to Clemson because of a guy by the name of Rick Stockstill. He was my recruit. He's my recruiting coordinator. He was the guy who recruited me. He had my territory. So he was the one and he just felt like another father. I mean, he was genuine. He was down to earth. He was who he said he was. So okay. I always say, I didn't commit to Clemson. I committed to Rick Stockstill.
Wow.
So that was for me. Because again, I didn't know nothing about Clemson at all, but I knew Rick Stockstill and I felt the love that he had and his genuineness. So I committed to Rick Stockstill. He just so happened to be a coach at Clemson.
So pretty much you're saying if he would have been a coach at any other school, you probably would chose that other school because of just the genuine person he was.
Most likely, yeah.
Wow. Man, I wish he was at Carolina. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So I got a question. So you told Clemson. So was there any school that was close, that kind of in the running, or not really?
And yeah, that was one of those things that people kept asking, you know, what's your top? But they won't always. Matter of fact, Phil Kornblue, he's a good friend of mine still to this day. He was the reporter at the time. He's always calling my house trying to get, you know, inside tip, you know, what's your top five? Never had a top five. Never had a school that I was just like, honestly, can I be totally transparent? I wasn't really paying attention. Hey, I'm going to go on this visit. I'm going on this visit. That's really about it. It was just I was so naive to the process. I was so in my own world, not really understanding everything. But no, I didn't have a first, second, third, top, nothing. It was just when it came down to it, it's like, I'm going, okay, I'm going where you at? Going to Clemson.
Wow.
And I remember it happened at OW in the little auditorium. Okay. I don't know if it's still there, right with that little, right outside it's the old main office. Because the main
it's
office.
It's still there.
So that office there, yeah, right there. And then you got the cafeteria over there. So yep. Right where that tree thing was, that little
yep
concrete bay, we were standing right there, right between there and the gym. We were standing there talking. And he was like, because I was like, well, I just need a little bit more time. He's like, what you need time for? You know, he's having that conversation. I said, okay, fine, I'm coming. And it happened right at OW.
Wow. And you've been on it and changed history. You've been on Change History for OW Clemson. So, because at that time, when I'm trying to remember, I'm pretty sure it was always gathered with the school, but I'm going to just say in our generation, because I can't count the guys before, shout out to them, but in our generation, I think you was the, that I can remember, to go to a big school and was like a big deal. Because mm-hmm. when you went, because I was in elementary school at that time.
Right.
And you was, I think you set the president. I think you put a W back on the map. I know you won't say that, but
a couple of them, yeah. We no, because right before when I first came in, I was, matter of fact, when I was a ninth grader, a gentleman, his name was Damian Young. He was I think he was a defensive lineman. He went to South Carolina. He committed to South Carolina. Then after that, I know Arturo Freeman. He
okay, yeah, went to yeah. South Carolina.
Yeah. You know, not Dwayne, but Devron. He went to Notre Dame. So we had some guys.
So Devron is ahead of you?
Yeah, Devron's a year ahead of me, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we already know Dwayne, you know, he played with the Seahawks for a while. He went to South Carolina State, but Devron went to, and I want to say Shelton Benjamin, I think he went to NC State, but I think he ended up wrestling. You know, he went.
I thought he didn't go to Minnesota.
I don't know.
Okay, he was a wrestler. Yeah,
he was a wrestler.
Yeah. Okay.
But Arturo Freeman, he was probably in our generation because
he was.
When I came, Arturo was a senior. Okay. My ninth grade year, he was 12th grade of my ninth grade year. So, and then he ended up going to South Carolina. And then that following year, you know, that's when Devron went to Notre Dame. Yeah.
Okay. You're right. He did. Okay. You're right. But, well, all those guys, everybody been on and did the thing. But I think if you were to put name a poll in the height, your name would come out first. Because I'm going to talk like you want to talk. You are very humble with it. But this is the thing that everybody on here, if you guys watching, like and share. But the thing about it, that's what sometimes I think, that's why you're so loved, because you're so humble, and you are, it's not even like a guess, like everybody, we love Woody, did this for us, and just as a community, I could say that, just as a whole, as a community, especially as the athletics mm-hmm. community. All right, so you get to Clemson. How did that culture shock from Orangeburg, South Carolina to Clemson, South Carolina? How did that culture shock? Because that's a big shock.
Yeah, because, you know, the joke was, you know, OW stands for one white. So I'm going from predominantly black. I mean, we had one white boy on our team. He was a kicker. Nope, then we had another one. He was a center. So we had a couple of them sprinkled in there, you know, a few. But, yeah, going to Clemson, man, it was a total – but I take that back. It really wasn't that big of a culture shock for me because from, like I said, my dad got me started in martial arts. So I traveled with these martial art tournaments, you know, from, you know, six, seven, eight, 9 years old. I'm traveling to these different, you know, Virginia, North Carolina, all these different places. I'm traveling. So I'm seeing different people. And then another thing, again, I talked about James and Papa with Orangeburg Track Club. I mean, that's going out to California because imagine that. Going out to California for a track meet, a national track meet, you know, we are with track and field. So I've been out and I've been exposed to different people and I've seen more. And that's one thing that so many of our people in the Berg suffer from. You know, if they go to Columbia, you know, they went somewhere. And it's so much more that when you get your eyes open to different horizons, different things, you know, you get over and you see different possibilities, you know, it broadens your horizon. It makes you dream bigger. So, but I was able to get out and see all that. So going to Clemson wasn't that big of a culture shock, especially because, you know, my dad and I had those conversations. I love telling the story too, because the thing he told me, we're driving up, we get ready to go. He said, don't you go up there and be just a football player. So I was like, you know, so many times we'll get caught up in our little comfort zone. He's like, don't go up there and just be a football player. So yes, I did my thing in the football area, but you know, I was involved in student government, multicultural affairs. I was involved in, you know, my major was marketing. So I'm in the pretty much in the business section of the school, but I'm in the biology department. I knew professors in the biology department. I knew professors in the engineering department. You know, I had a personal relationship with the president, you know, because I just got out there and I just met people. And, you know, people from different countries. So it was just one of those things. It was a great experience for me. I took my dad's advice and I actually made the most out of that opportunity, because what it did, it actually taught me how to deal with different people from different cultures, different aspects of life. So no matter what room I walked into, I was comfortable.
Wow, and that's something that I'm pretty sure those professors was not used to seeing their starting quarterback, even knowing who they are. Forget their name, even.
I mean, it was to the point that I knew the names of the parking attendants. I knew the names of the people in the dining hall, because I mean, it's just.
But you know what though, and that's why to this day, see, when I did my homework, I have some friends who attended Clemson University or a little after you or before you, and that's why you are so beloved, because it's those little things that people. Because if you was a butthole, people would love to tell that story, but they can't.
Yeah. That's one thing. Yeah, my dad told me, we always had those conversations. Your name means something. You know, your reputation means something. You know, if someone try to even make up a story and it gets to the right ear, somebody will say, nah, that ain't what it is.
That don't sound right. Okay, so you go to Clemson. You're fitting in. So at what point, did you redshirt your freshman year?
I did, yeah. I redshirted my freshman year.
So okay, you redshirted your freshman year. And who was the quarterback then?
When I first got there, it was Nealon Green.
Okay.
Yeah, Nealon Green was the quarterback then. And then when he left, it was Brandon Streeter took over, who's now he's a quarterback coach at Clemson. So Brandon Streeter took over, and it was a few of us others that were still there.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So at what point when you at Clemson, at what point did you actually get the get on the field? Well, not get on the field. Did you get on the field before you played quarterback? The special teams, or did it save you?
No, I was quarterback the whole time.
Okay.
My sophomore year, which is my freshman year on the field, my second year at Clemson, I actually got to start a game. Didn't go very well, because they still had not allowed me to throw the ball. So they got me in there just kind of running around and limited offense. So that's one thing. It didn't go very well. And that's when, because I was backing up Streeter, and our offense the past previous games just wasn't doing very well. So they just wanted to change. So they had me start that game. And it was a limited offensive package. And I actually said, you know, I'm not going to put it all on them, because it was still a curve for me. Because I'm coming from a different type of offense, a shotgun no huddle, where our play calling is red five. You know, that's everything. That everyone knows what to do. You get there, you got pro right, split left, 369, Nero Z dad. I have no idea what you're talking about. So it was a little learning curve for me. But by that time in the season, I actually got comfortable with it, and they still kind of kept the playbook small for me. But I still have some role plays. I come in and run a couple of plays and come back out.
Okay. You know,
my second year at Clemson.
And who was the offensive coordinator at that time?
At that time, let's see. I believe it was Ensminger.
Okay.
Steve Ensminger, my freshman year. And then my second year, I'm not sure. I think he was still there, but I don't know if he was going. I don't know who our coordinator was. My second year, because Coach West was still there, so I don't know who that officer coordinator was.
Okay,
my second year, I think it was still Steve Ensminger.
Okay, so at what point did you get the did you earn your starting spot? That'll be your junior year.
I would say I earned it going into my junior year, but the year after that, that's when I started a lot that year because Brandon Streeter got hurt. So I started many games that year, and that's my guy. I mean, you want to talk about a trooper, and just give you a quick resume. at my third year at Clemson, in spring ball, he dislocates his ankle. He comes back. Yeah, he dislocates his ankle in spring ball, comes back, and then, third or fourth game, he breaks his collarbone.
Good Lord.
Comes back from a broken collarbone the same year, a couple of games that he dislocates his hip. And he still comes back and plays in the bowl game.
Now, that's a trooper.
Yeah, so like I said, I got to start a lot that year because, that was 99 that year because he was hurt. But that was when I began to come into my own, because that's the year that Coach Bowden came in. And okay. That's when they brought in Rich Rodriguez, who brought in shotgun, no huddle, hurry up. And that was, I was felt at home.
And I'm glad you said that, guys, because I said it when I made my video that I first went to you to catch attention. Guys who don't know football, don't speak. if you don't know who Rich Rodriguez is, do your homework. I know a lot of people get credit for it, but I'm gonna see what it is. I think this is my opinion, Woodrow. You can tell me different. This is what I say about you. I think Wood Rodriguez is the godfather of the spread, and you were the tool that introduced the spread offense to the world. And when I said that,
yeah, he was one of the pioneers. You're exactly right. I think he was, if not the first, he was very close. He's like one and a half. You know, if he's not the first, you know, he was the first to really come out there with that shotgun. No, honey, we going to put the pedal to the metal, run 100 plays, tire out your defense, tempo. He ran off most of the linemen because he didn't want them big 6'5", 6'6", 300. No, our lineman was, 6'1", 6'2", at the most, about 280, but can move and can block and was strong, and that's what he wanted.
Yep. And you were the I can't think of the word on you, but you were the poster child. And I laughed with your coach when I made that top 10 FC South Carolina. This is the first time I talked about you, made the top things. And what happened was, it was some guys that don't look like us. and when I put the Rich Rodriguez thing in there, they said, you know what? You are right. They didn't even think about that. Because I said, what made me, I didn't even realize it. But one day I watched the interview with Rich, and he brought you up, and he said it, that you were the guy, introduce it, because I'm like, well, I'm going to get to that later. But you were the guy who introduced the spread offense and ran it, because like, I posted your stats. You were the first guy, I'm pretty sure you know this, because you all Woodrow, to run, was it pass for 2,000 and run for 1,000 yards against NCAA history? First ever. Guys, I want you guys to let that sit in your spirit. Let that sit, because it's not for those who are younger. You guys don't understand. Offenses back then for football are not the same how it is now. The spread was not and I really can think the only spread guys even I could think of right then is think of spread. The only two guys, and people don't realize this, the only two guys that come to my mind is you and Vic.
But Rich, in that era, but Vic ran the traditional offense. He was at Virginia Tech.
He just ran. Yeah, you're right.
He just was a freak of nature.
You're right. He did run the spread.
They ran the I formation. Yeah, they ran the ball down your throat.
You're right. So, Rich, you are the godfather spread. Okay. So Rich Rodriguez came there. At what point did you realize? I'm pretty sure he came there. If the other coach got fired, he came there in the summertime. At what point did you say, man, this right here going to be fun?
It was fun when he came in. I remember our first meeting, because I love transparency. That's one thing I like. So our first meeting, he comes in and he sits down. He says, because we've been through a whole bunch of, just craziness. He comes in, he sits down. He said, listen, I'm going to tell y'all right off the bat. I'm Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Uh-huh.
He said, in the meeting rooms, I'm Dr. Jekyll. I'm calm. Mm-hmm. We're talking. I'm teaching. That's my element to make sure you guys know what you're doing. He said, but on the field, I'm Mr. Hyde. I'm yelling. I'm in your face. I'm screaming. I'm throwing stuff at you. He said, I'm going to put so much pressure on you on that practice field that when we get to the game and I'm up in the booth, you can relax and play ball because I'm not up breathing on your neck. And I was like, oh, I can deal with that. So if I'm on the field and I make a bad read, I make a mistake, and he yells, he throws the paper at me, or he throws his hat. One day he will not throw his Oakleys. He'll tell you that I'm not throwing my Oakleys, but he throw his hat at you. He kicks some dirt at you. He yell, he come, he wouldn't hit you or shake you. He probably grab you and just yell. But I never took it personally. I never took offense because he already explained to me what he was doing.
Okay.
So, and then we get back, and matter of fact, we go back into the film room, and that same play he done raked me out over, he's just talking just as calm as you and I are. So this is what you should have done, you know. This here, when you see that safety here, you know, you got to make sure you anticipate. So now he's teaching. And it was just a beautiful thing. So when I began to learn, I began to put my trust in him. Like I said, Coach Stockstill was still there. I always had a confident there. But, man, it was just one of those things of, man, it was like, okay, I could do this. And then finally, that day, one scrimmage that summer, it just clicked. And offense was like second nature. And it's like I knew exactly what to do before it happened. I walk up to the line of scrimmage, and I see the defense. I'm like, oh, I already know what y'all doing, so we about to do this. So that's it. Just clicked for me.
Wow. So at that point, you already know. So and that's good. That's going into your junior year.
1999. Yeah, that was a yeah.
Junior. Mm-hmm. So your junior year, you come on the field, and at that point, you take off. Y'all hit the ground running. You hit the ground running.
Yeah.
You go.
He came in there. We went. We had a decent season that year. Like I said, we had that first year. We had first time, we went 2 games above 500, went to a bowl game that first year. And then that following year, in the year 2000, is you talking about the takeoff. That's when we took off. We jumped the gates. We 8-0. You know, number two, number three in the country. That was that year. But that for me, you know, I'm a transparent person. I think it's gonna help somebody. For me, it was a double-edged sword because of you get out there and you perform it week in and week out. You know, one thing with me, I've always, and even to this day, struggle with insecurities. Okay. And you wouldn't know. Because of the way I carry myself, the way I think. But you get out there, you have a great game. And I can remember having a great game and then getting, you know, dressed and getting on the bus. It's like now all of a sudden the pressure jumps on your back. And it's like, oh, will I be able to do it again? If I don't perform, will I lose my job? Will I lose my scholarship? You know, all these craziness started. So a good friend of mine, and it kind of put everything in perspective for me. He said it's years after. I heard him say it's year after, but it was exactly what kind of I went through. He said, adversity introduces a man to himself. That's Marcus Lattimore. So just in case you, Marcus Lattimore said, adversity introduces a man to himself. So when you get in place, yeah, it is. So for me, it's two things you can do with that insecurity. You can either allow it to make you tuck and hide, or you can allow it to make you focus in and become better. And that's what I use. I took those insecurities and I made it to where no one was gonna outwork me. No one's gonna know more than me. So every time I said the best way to combat insecurity is preparation. So I want to make sure I was prepared for every game. I was prepared for every classroom. I was prepared for any and every situation I was going to enter into, because that would get rid of those insecurities so I can go out and be free and play.
Okay. Wow. Now I'm going to tell you something, man. That is very deep. So what did you guys actually finish the season with that year?
That year we ended up, I think we finished 10-3.
Okay.
That year, because I ended up, it was North Carolina game, I ended up getting hurt. So I kind of hobbled through the rest of the year. And
Tar Heels are NC State.
Yep. Tar Heels when I got hurt. Matter of fact, that's when my guy, Willie, came in, threw for a touchdown, and brought us back to a victory. You know, Willie Simmons, he was the backup quarterback then. He's now the head coach at Florida A&M. So
wow. Shout out to him.
Yes, that's my guy, too. Yeah, he was my coach after a while.
Wow. So yeah, what would you mean? You were the senior or junior at this point?
At that point, I was a junior.
Okay.
When Willie came in, yeah. Because he came in 99, Coach Bowden's first year. So that was his second year there.
Okay.
In 2000.
All right. So you was a junior that you had the year that you went 10-3, or you were a senior the year that you went 10-3?
I was a junior the year we went
10-3. So you were a junior. Okay. So now coming to your senior year, now you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So now going to your senior year, because I remember, I think your senior year, I was a freshman at OW, I believe. I graduated 2005. I think I might have been a freshman. A freshman or sophomore, I can't remember. But coming into your senior year, you had Heisman hype.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I remember you had the Heisman hype. I remember playing with you on NCAA 99 when they had the block characters.
Yeah.
So I remember that because NCAA is always a year behind.
Yeah.
So you had a good year. In 2000, you have the 99 thing, okay?
Yeah.
So you have Heisman. How was that pressure? I don't know if you call it pressure or not. I don't know what you want to call it.
It's just kind of feeding off of what I just said. It's one of those things of, for me, it didn't matter. I could care less.
That's a big deal, though.
It's a big deal when that's your mindset. That wasn't my mindset. I could care less. You know, and I understood the magnitude of that award for the program, for the school, for the city, for the state. You know, I understood what that meant. But as far as for me, you know, I pushed because I was a firm believer that, look, if I take care of what I'm supposed to take care of, everything that's attached to it will come. My yardage will be what it needs to be. My performance will be what it needs to be. Any awards that's going to come is going to be what it needs to be. But if I make sure I understand defenses, I'm the best conditioned athlete on the field, I'm a strong leader, I'm taking care of my stuff in the classroom. If I take care of that stuff,
everything is going to come.
Yeah, everything that's attached to it is going to come. If I go out there shooting, trying to get those things, and I miss these fundamental principles, I'm going to miss it every time.
Miss every time. Everything's going to come. Hey, guys, if you're coming on here, this is episode 75. Hit that like, hit that share button. Hit that like, hit that share button. I'm interviewing the legend, Woodrow Daniels III. He's not going to call himself a legend because he's modest. But me, being a former Oliver Wilkerson athlete, we're going to call him a legend. That's us speaking. I'm doing it for all of us who, shout out to EJ. Like he said, he used to argue all the time Woody was better than Vic. But shout out to EJ for saying that in here. But, okay, so you're going into your senior year. How did the senior year – you got the Heisman hype going into the year. Because I remember this just from the other side. Was just being up from the bird, we ready for it. Because now, correct me if I'm wrong. Is that the year that Ed Crouch run it?
The Heisman? Yes. Nebraska, yes.
Yep. Wow. See, it's crazy how I can remember that from the video game. Yeah. So – he ended up winning the Heisman, which is very debatable.
Yeah.
At the very least. And those who remember, he ran a triple option. I remember that because they ran it.
Yeah.
So did you feel, now this is my thing, now coming from again, I think, hey, now, see, well, this is how you know, see, man, you own a legend. We talked about you in my locker room every day. You, because y'all guy was a guy we looking at you. You, Alex Barron, Jonas Seawright, because they was younger than you. But those are the guys. Shout out, Big Jose. Even though he was at Savannah State, we just talk about Jose because that was the biggest human being we've ever seen, probably. But did you finish fifth or sixth in the Heisman vote? I might be wrong.
That's a good question. You might have to Google it because I have absolutely no idea.
Okay.
I know that year, it wasn't necessarily a struggle, but Coach Rod had left.
Because he got a job at West Virginia, right?
Yes. So we honestly didn't have any offensive identity that year. So we kind of struggled to find who we are. And it was just the fact that group that I came in with, we're all now seniors. And we basically mounted together, like, look, I don't care what they call, we just gonna make it work.
Yeah. You know,
it's one of those things. So it was that's what that was about that year. So I mean, we had a decent season. We ended up going to a bowl game. We again, I think we were back maybe two or three games above 500. So we qualified to a bowl game. So that
but that's the big difference from going 10-3. So I had a question. So I'm not a coach. You were actually there. I'm just talking, thinking from the common man. If I have this stud athlete at quarterback, I've seen what happens when he runs the spread offense. Did they not think this to get another offensive coordinator that could implement another version of the spread? Or did it try it and it just didn't work? Or
it just didn't work because we, like I said, we just didn't have that identity that we had before. You know, we were trying too many new things sometimes. And sometimes we'll see a, like, let's say we're going to play Wake Forest.
Okay.
NC State was playing Wake Forest the week before, and they ran a play that was successful against Wake Forest. So we're going to put it in our offense this year. You know, NC State done practiced that play all through camp, all through the year, and we're going to put it in now because we see it work, that it worked on Wake Forest, and we're about to go play them. So that was kind of, we still had our core offense, but it was still, you just didn't have that identity that we had. Rodriguez was there. He's like, look, this we're running, I don't care. If they start to stop what we're running, we're just going to go, we're going to speed up the tempo. We had our regular up-paced tempo where we're snapping the ball in the late in the 15 seconds on the clock, or 10 at the most, at the least, I mean. And, you know, it's 25-second play. No, is it 40 or 25? I can't even remember right now. But let's say if it's 25, you know, if we go Indy, we speed it up. If it's 25-second play clock, then – you know, you're not snapping that ball needs to be snapped before 18 seconds. And if we go Daytona, soon as they spot the ball, we snapping it.
So wow. The
kind of tempos we would get to, and we call Daytona, I mean, look, don't look, we're not checking nothing, we're not reading nothing, we're just going to run the play because we're going to run it down their throat, we're going to run this play, we're just going to go high-speed tempo and run them out the building. So that's just one of those things, and I love Daytona because, like I said, I never got tired.
Wow, I mean that come from that Coach Tommy Brown conditioning. So shout out to, so I guess even with this story, I'm catching that because I didn't know that part. I'm catching that who the coach is really makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Coaches mean everything. Like, it's the players and it's the coaches, but it's them working together. When you have a coaching staff or coaching coordinators that has instilled the trust of their team, and you know the team has the trust of the coach back and forth, you know that's when you see those guys go out and really play. Like Coach Brown, we've run through the wall for him. You know, these kind of things that we would do. But you know, so when you have that security in one another, that's when you see stuff happen. So when there's a little, you know, it talks about. Everything starts at the top. If there's ascension up top, then it's going to trickle down. So
it gets them every time.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we do that. Okay, so now this is where I get to where this is when I get to the anger of every guy who know about football from Orangeburg County and how we feel about this. Okay, so your senior comes. It's time for where did he get drafted? So now, in our mind, let me see, because I think Vic came out the year before you, right?
He did.
Vic came out the year before you. So in our mind, now you can tell us how you feel about it. You can be as candid as you want or not as candid as you want. We just knew, looking at what you've done, looking at some guys we know that went before you, that you was gonna be a first round pick. We thought a top 10 pick. They went from top 10 to first round. So now I'm gonna ask you, well, your modest expectations of you are very modest, but how did you feel? Okay, well, what did your agent tell you going into that draft?
The writing was kind of pretty much already on the wall. I tell you this interesting story. You know, I played a couple of bowl games. after my senior year. So I went to the East-West Shrine game. That was one all-star game. And went out there, did very well, enjoyed myself, showed very well, in my opinion. And then I think a couple of weeks later, I was selected to go to the Senior Bowl. Now that's the bowl that where all the college, I mean, not high school,
the pro NFL scouts,
NFL coaches and GMs, they all come to that game and they're there throughout the whole week. So I know I'm going to the Senior Bowl. I'm getting ready. I find out a week before having to leave for the Senior Bowl that they're bringing me in as a running back.
There you go.
I found this out through an agent that was trying to get me to sign with them. He calls me and he said, hey, I don't know if you noticed or not, but you know, they got you. And I had no idea. So, but at this time I was at such a different point in my life, you know, even just rewinding back 1999 when Coach Bowden and that staff came in, they brought in a guy by the name of Darren Bruce. He was a team chaplain. And that was the first time I actually, you know, submitted my life to Jesus for real. And wow. I was a whole different plane at that moment. So it's like, hey, God, whatever you're doing, I'm fine. I'll jump with it. If I'm gonna play running back, I'll do what I need to do. It don't make no difference because my mission is different now. I'm not out here trying to prove to the world that I can play quarterback. I was there coming out of high school because I had a couple of different messages on my voicemail. Hey, Woody, we like you at quarterback, but we want to try you at DB. Hey, what do you think about it? We want to bring you in as a Nope, never called those coaches back. But I didn't have that chip anymore. But, you know, even going in today, Vic was a unicorn. They still, at that time, wasn't ready for us. They wasn't ready for the black quarterback. They didn't think we were smart enough. They didn't think we could handle the pressure. Even if you look at it now, in today's game, if they're talking about a Russell Wilson or a Lamar Jackson or a Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson, they'll talk about physical attributes.
Yep.
Oh, he has a strong arm. Oh, he's fast. But if you're talking about, you know, a Josh Rose or a Drew Bledsoe or one of these, not Drew Bledsoe, that's a long time ago, but Drew Brees, you know, one of the white quarterbacks, they're talking about intangibles. He's a leader. He has the command of the locker room. Oh, yep. Football IQ. I mean, it's just they still don't believe that we
can. Nope.
Even though we're out there and showing. I mean, they dog Lamar right, left, up, down, backwards, forwards. And he's only like and they still won't give him credit, but he's probably the leader in MVP candidate race right now.
He is.
That joke.
Him and Tom Brady.
He walked into the league and said, nope, I don't need no agent. Nope. Him and his mom negotiate their contract. I'm a quarterback. They try to steer the conversation. I remember watching him on his interviews. I'm a quarterback. And look what he's doing now. So, I mean, it's just one of those things that we rattled their brains a little bit. You know, Vic and I did. Even a good friend of mine, Antoine Randall, he was out in Houston. And, you know, his senior year in college, he kind of went back and forth from quarterback to receiver.
Yep.
He's 5'9", 5'10".
Yep, he ended up playing receiver for the Steelers.
Steelers, exactly. So there's a lot of guys like that that where, you know, either we get an opportunity to go in and play, but they really didn't want to see us play. Unless you was that 6'4", 6'5", strong arm dude, they didn't.
Well, even with that, look what it did. Look what the man Warren Moon did. And he was a prototypical. He don't even run.
When he was at Washington, he ran a little bit. You still got some of his college film.
Yeah.
You know, he would get after. Even in Canada, he would get after. But he, by the time he got back to the league, man, he was the reason why I wore number one. And that was another. He was the reason why I wore number one. So, because that was my guy.
Wow. Did not know that.
Yeah. And I had the awesome opportunity to actually meet him at an event in Atlanta a couple of years ago. And, you know, it was great. You know, strange numbers, being able to reach out and talk to somebody that you look up to. You know, as a person. So it was a great honor to meet him. But yeah, he had to go to Canada and he lit the scoreboard up when he was in college. And he had to go to Canada and play a little while before he can come back and actually get started. Now he's sitting at home.
He won like four or five great cups in Canada. and before they even let him come back. And he still was tall slow. He came back and took a struggling Houston Oilers team to where they need a you know, in a better position, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's Randall Cunningham. You know, you got Doug Williams. You know, you got these guys coming through, and it's, you know, those are, again, unicorns. They're anomaly. Yep. They're an exception to the rule, not the rule. And even now, even though the dynamic is shifting, you know, my pastor says it all the time. He said, man, he said, you were just ahead of your time. He said,
you were.
If you were to come out in today's game, he said, you'd be that guy.
And I said, you'd be this right here. you'd be number one pick.
They say Kyler Murray, they say he's 5'10". He's not
5'10". No, he's not 5'10". And he's not 5'10". And you're not going to say he's not 5'10", and you better Kyler Murray. That's the argument.
But because I say this all the time, though. I say, you know, but sometimes, and I use this analogy just as an analogy, but not to put myself or put ourselves on this level. You think about people in the civil rights movement. You know, you hear Martin Luther King say, you know, I may not get there with you, but we're going to get to the promised land. It has to be each generation supposed to set the next generation up to go further. So we got them made that conversation a little bit more prevalent. And now you get to see these guys walk into the NFL and
do
their thing. So, I mean, it was supposed to happen like that.
I guess so, man, but I'm not. I guess so, because I know better. I know I would never question God.
Yeah,
but
exactly. I'll coin from the rock. Shut your mouth and do your job. That's kind of how you gotta roll with it. It's joking about, but it's one of those things that, man, you gotta always push, because you know you got somebody coming behind you. The way cleaner and better for them. So they can go further and push the next generation to the next level. So
and I think you did that, and shout out, because I love hearing, because see, I don't count. When I say I don't count, I'm a guy from Orangeburg. I play for Orangeburg Wilkerson. So we know who Virgil Dazzler is. Ain't no question, no doubt. But when I'm watching interviews and I hear Mike Vick say your name, when I'm watching interviews and I hear Rich Rodriguez say your name, Tommy Bowden say your name. You know Tommy Bowden? He's not as big as Bobby Bowden, but he's still big enough to where, you know, he says your name, and I'm like, okay, they know.
Mm-hmm.
They know, because ain't nobody talking about Eric Crouch right now unless they was a Nebraska fan. That's all I'm saying. Eric Crouch, he didn't change the dynamic of – he didn't change football. Mm-hmm. Ain't no quarterback still getting drafted with a triple option. You know what I'm saying? But you are the face. You, Rich Rodriguez. They put a patch up there. You, Rich Rodriguez, and you pick somebody else, the godfather of the spread. So you get to the Senior Bowl. They say they want you to play running back, which I'm going to call hogwash. We're going to say hogwash on that. So you already know what the powers to be are planning to do with your talents.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a question. So did you not go, or did you win and you just moved running back? You went? Okay.
Yeah, it was an issue. And that's when I called a good friend of mine, and I ended up signing with my agent. I chose my agent. I called him and decided, and he actually, watch this, tell you how much influence that Rick Stock still had on my life. This agent, he was a good friend of Stockstill. They actually played ball together at Florida State.
Okay.
So I trusted his word, and I went with him because, again, I'm still not pretty naive to this whole process. But, yeah, I went down there, so I worked out that whole week.
At running back or quarterback too?
Yeah, at running back. The whole time at the Senior Bowl, I was running back the whole time. So that was I practiced that whole week before trying to learn how to take handoffs and different stuff, you know, but it wasn't that bad of a transition. It's just like when I say, oh, shoot, I only got to learn this little bit of the offense? Shoot, this is easy. Because I'm used to learning everybody's position on both offense and defense. So now I just got to learn. Oh, this is cakewalk for me. But it was a different thing. And I remember first practice, and I got to go block. I was like, oh, God, I have no idea how to do this.
And who did you have to block at that time? Because I know there had to be some studs there.
I don't remember his name, but I think he was like one of the top five picks. He was defensive end coming out of Florida.
It was Javon Curtis?
No, it was. I don't think it was Curtis.
Okay.
I don't know who it was, but I remember he was from Florida, and he ended up going top. He was a top top 10 pick, top 5 pick. And when I lined up, it's like, oh, I said, well, shoot, I don't know nothing else to do, but I just going to hit him. And luckily, when I hit him, he hit me, and we kind of stalemated, and that was about it. I think he took it easy on me because he knew I was a quarterback. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But it was like, oh, you did a great job. But because I love those, he could have destroyed me because I don't know. I've never done it before, but it's just one of those things of bumping. I'm just gonna get out of here. I got my talent. Once you get the ball in my hand, that I'm at home. So it just matter of getting the ball. I can still catch the ball. I catch real well.
Yeah.
And at that time, I think it was Derek Carr was the quarterback because he came out of Fresno State.
Yes.
And he knew about me, so he's like, man, he was trying to get the ball to me. You know, if I'm coming out of the backfield, he mentioned before he looked downfield, he was throwing the ball to me. So I mean, it's one of those things.
Because he knew you should have had that spot. We all knew Derek Carr, the first pick ever for the Houston Texans.
Yeah.
The most hit quarterback in history. I think he goes down he's the most hit quarterback in NFL history.
Yeah. Him and Matt Schaub. I think Matt Schaub because Matt, but he was at the Houston too when that happened. So
yep.
I think it was the Houston.
Yep. Yep.
So yeah, man. Him and Matt Schaub probably shared that title. But yeah, man, it was good. Nice. I had a couple breakout runs and did well. I got, you know, was able to shake some eyes and had some people started calling and noticing me, even though I won't say out of position because any place on the offensive side of the ball for me, if I was in my position, because like I said, you know, I was in a different place. So I was able to step up to the learning curve pretty quickly. And again, that's that whole preparation thing. And, you know, I had a week to get ready for the Senior Bowl. So I took that week and I dug in. And then when I got there, I just continued to roll.
You was ready. And you definitely did that. So you do your thing. I don't know whether we didn't watch the Senior Bowl. Let me tell you what we actually watched that whole draft as a unit, as a team. I'm gonna call us the fat guys. We were the line. We called us the fat boys because it's Sheldon Sistrom. We were the fat boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember watching. We would watch the draft because, like I said, we couldn't watch the Senior Bowl, so the Senior Bowl was went over our head because we just knew. What it was going on. I'm gonna be watching it, and I wouldn't even call it like I want to say it was. I think the best way to describe it was anger, because it's one thing to know somebody didn't get a shot, but it's one thing to know somebody got holes. I guess you would say, and we actually was like angry,
And like I said, that one of those things they'd already spoken over me. They'd said that. You know, they said my arm wasn't strong enough. They said I wasn't accurate enough. They said I wasn't tall enough. You know, all these marks to get me when those scouts come out, they look and they see and they put that in their pen and they start sharing notes. So that was a thing out on me. And that's why they asked me to move to run it back. But whatever. I mean, I still got my opportunities when I actually got to the league and, you know, Parcells, like, we probably get this. But, you know, I had a couple of mini camps at quarterback and had a couple of matches at quarterback when I was at my – couple of teams that I was with, so I mean, I got to show my skills.
So I mean, you go to the league because let me tell you something. One thing they know about me on this podcast, I hate the Dallas Cowboys. But that day when the Dallas Cowboys drafted you, I definitely remember that because it was in the Hey guys, all my football players on here, guys, please share some with me so we don't think I'm crazy. How much we were talking about him back in the day. I think it was in the T&D on that Sunday when you signed with the Cowboys. So how was that conversation when they finally said, all right, we're gonna sign you as a free agent? You was a free agent signing, right?
Well, my agent already, we've been talking through the whole scenario, what could happen. And I always, we were joking around about it. I was almost what they call Mr. Irrelevant, the very last pick in the draft to the Houston.
Okay.
That almost happened. They ended up pulling the plug on somewhere else. But and then no sooner after the end of the draft, you know, Cowboys called and they wanted to bring me in. For me, it was like, oh, okay, well, going to Texas. And it was just that simple. Next chapter, let's get rolling.
Next chapter. You know what's funny about that? I'm pretty sure you know this because you got – shout out to Kendra and Jazz, your nieces. I know they tell you. Do you know to this day, if you ever watch – what do the NFL do? The NFL – like Like when they're doing the and I think the NFL Central that when they're interviewing people, you know that sometimes that the NFL uses your kickoff return as a cowboy into like the montage.
No, I didn't know that.
The NFL Network is in there, like they do this thing, and that run back, that special teams run back for the Cowboys is in their montage.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh wow, that's neat right there.
I'm telling you, man, because it's in there. I'm like, because I see, because they show it, they put it in there, they look, it's like in a montage when they do like NFL, whatever they do, whatever NFL Network does thing where they do like interview with people, this is part of the thing that they show is there's a clips, and one of those things they show is you running back that return for the Cowboys. I don't know if you knew that or not, but if you didn't know, now you know.
Yeah.
So how was the Cowboys camp? How was it being in Jerry World? Or just another camp?
It was another camp, but then you walk in there and you see these different players, and you know this is a professional game, and you like, can I play with this guy? These guys, it's the NFL, you know. But then you learn very quickly when you get out there and you get rolling, you get to playing, you get to practice, and you get to learn. It's like, oh, okay. I can play with these guys because I learned this. This is what I learned and what really pushed me forward. In every level, you're going to have your great players. You're going to have your system players. You're going to have your good players. And you're going to have your terrible players.
Gotcha.
You look at some of the guys on the NFL roster, you're like, how in the world did he make this? But it's there. I mean, so in every life, you're going to have all of those, and you just realize really quickly that, again, all about preparation. Prepare properly, and then when I stepped out there on the field, it's just time to go play. We are in the backyard playing ball. That's how I was. I just had fun because I was so loose at this point in my life. I was just out there having fun. And
just enjoying life.
Yeah.
So who was the quarterback for the Cowboys at that time?
Got there, my big brother. I called him my big brother, Quincy Carter. He was the quarterback at the time.
Quincy Carter didn't get a fair shake. I'm going to say that about Quincy Carter also.
Yeah, that's
my guy. Well, he got a shake, but I don't think Quincy Carter. To me, Quincy Carter, you can Quincy Carter. I don't think Anthony Wright got a fair shake when he led that Ravens team.
Anthony, because he was there too. Was that my second year? They brought him in. He was there with me for a brief period of time. It might have been my first year. First or second year with the Cowboys. He was there. You know, he did a good job. He made a great living as a backup third string quarterback.
He did, because he got holes that I never forget. I watched it because I just love football, because the Ravens almost got into a fight with the players and the personnel because they benched him to put in Cal Bowler. And that didn't go over well.
I'm sure.
But politics.
A right, man. He was a smooth individual. Matter of fact, I stole my play fake from him because I saw the way he did it. I was just like blown away. So I stole it and I made it my own. I was able to actually make a big play off of that one time. So yeah, A right, smooth operator.
So how many years were you with the Cowboys?
I was with the Cowboys for 2 years.
Okay.
Went to Atlanta 2 years. Okay. Came back to the Cowboys.
Okay. So I got a question. When you went to Atlanta, you can answer this question. I don't know if it's true. You went to Atlanta because the agency called you, or did Mike? How did that work? How did the Atlanta thing come into play? Like, did this pick you up?
Yeah, so how it works is because I got released from the Cowboys. When you're released from a team, they got a thing called waivers. A team has 24 hours to claim you off of waivers. So if they see that you've been released, they got 24 hours to claim you and say, hey, you come in, then you basically obligated to go to that team. Outside of that 24 hours, you can go pretty much wherever you want, depending on the injury. So once I was released from the Cowboys, that's when Atlanta claimed me off of waivers. So I was shipped over to Atlanta.
And you went over there, and you also ran back to somebody put it here. They said, didn't you run back one for the Falcons too? Kickoff return?
Yeah, it was the preseason, but they had a vet there, Allen Rossum. He was there, and he was their primary kick returner. But they actually got in there and started doing some kick returns too, and that's when I first had the opportunity to. Matter of fact, they actually gave me my own package. I had about 8 to 10 plays at quarterback, and I'd go in there and I'd run a couple plays, which was crazy because they only ran 2 plays out of that entire package, and everyone knew what it was. If I was under center, running the option. If I was in a shotgun, I was running the sweep. So I mean,
if I'm at the house and I knew what it was.
But the best part about it, like, yeah, you know it's coming, but I'm still gonna make something happen. That's just kind of
there you go.
And I remember just when they first put the stuff in, they had me playing QB, and they, oh, I know you can throw the ball like that. Oh, I know you can, man, you got an arm on you. And I'm sitting here like, you didn't know I knew.
Yeah. But the same arm I had coming out of Clemson.
Yeah.
It's the same arm.
Yeah. That's what, matter of fact, that's what happened when I first got the Cowboys, that's why they put that play in, that toss sweep. I actually threw a touchdown in the preseason game because former quarterback. So we ran it. First time we ran it against, I think we were playing the Panthers in Carolina. Did a toss sweep first game, threw a touchdown in the game because of that. So, but yeah.
Well, I ain't gonna lie, I wish you wouldn't even told me that, because now you just made me more mad. I ain't gonna lie. I wish you wouldn't even told me that, because now you made me more mad. Because, well, like I say, now all the Woodies who are you now, thank God they actually get the opportunities to go on and get, even though sometimes they might face adversity, still not like you had to, of course, and make it happen. Okay, so you get the Falcons. So, was the Falcons, that was your last pro team?
No, I went back to it. Went back to Dallas. After Atlanta.
So you do that. So what is it now? What is life for Woodrow? What do you decide? What's life at the NFL? Do you know whether you're going to work field? You want to coach? Or how's life? Because at that time, you weren't married, right?
No.
Okay, so how is life? Where does life lead Woodrow at that point?
Well, when I left the league, I spent about, so that was 2005 when I finished up with the league, NFL. Then I spent probably the next four years in arena ball. So I played arena out in Chicago for a couple of years, and then I ended up going to.
How was that? How was that experience?
Oh, man, it was so much fun. There was, for me, when I got there, it was just no pressure. It was really backyard football for me. We just had so much fun out there on that field.
Wow.
Crazy fun, man. I mean, I can't, that's how I'll describe it. It was just fun.
Chicago Rush? Was it Chicago Rush?
Mm-hmm.
So 4 years, and you do your thing with that.
Yeah, and then when I end up because of Chicago, then I'm going up to Pennsylvania, Harrisburg, and then thought I was done, and then I got an opportunity to come up to Greenville for a team that was up here that turned out to be a total crazy wash, but by this time I was married.
Okay.
Came up here and kind of settled in the upstate and got into state after that. Yeah.
Well, we all know. Of course, you were still in the upstate because that's your town there. That's.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we settled in. So I got into sales and. Basically been in sales since then, and here recently really getting into my true passions of really helping people, especially with my speaking. So I started my own company, my wife and I.
Okay.
So I have a company where I do speaking, motivational speaking, but a big part of that is mentorship. I just started a mentor group at a local middle school here. So doing that. But my whole aim in life was just to help people realize the greatness they have inside of them, push them, and help them unlock it so they can actually walk in it for the rest of their life. Because like I said, so many times we just, our young kids, they don't know what they don't know. And when you get exposed to certain foolishness, and that's, and foolishness is all you know, you need somebody to come in there and say, hey, no, there's another path, there's a different path, there's a better path. And you actually can achieve that. You can do that. You know, you got to settle for crumbs when you got a whole meal on the table, you know? So, and that's my lot in life right now.
Man, and I'm glad you said that, because especially right now, I'm pretty sure you read the news. I'm not going to go into details. I try to do what I could do, but Orangeburg really needs that right now. I'm pretty sure you see the news. And I'm glad somebody like you, because I'm pretty sure right now, Woodrow, we don't know is people are watching this on Facebook, YouTube, or whatever they're watching that, and they're showing their kids, hey, this guy right here, I went to school with him. He's from Orangeburg. He did it too. Let me tell you a crazy story about something about, you don't know the impact you have. Do you know the impact you have? I'll start, you might not know. You understand your impact?
I'm learning.
Okay. Let me tell you about your impact. Well, I was at William J. Clark. I was at William J. Clark in the sixth grade. And you came, you and Jackie Robinson came to Clark. Mm-hmm. And you came with your Clemson jersey on. Mm-hmm. Now, just like you said, for you, college was so far, and the only thing you saw was state. For us, we don't know what a big time college play even looks like. Mm. And for you to have come, you and Jackie Robinson came to Clark and spoke to us, I'll never forget. And I would say, wow, these guys came to, well, and I pushed back on some people from state. You know how I feel about this. And I said to this day, I'll never forget that day, because those kind of impacts make everlasting impact, especially on kids. Mm-hmm. When the guy comes, you came, gave us a very strong speech about college and what you could do, what we can be. You probably remember that, because you probably do 1,000 of them, especially back then. What you could do, you and Jackie Robinson spoke, and it made an impact, especially with some kids' life. I've never seen a South Carolina State football player in middle school or in elementary school.
Wow.
That's a problem. Mm-hmm. And so at this time, when we see you, I'm not even putting that you are from Orangeburg. I'm just saying this guy from Clemson that I see on Saturdays is here at my school speaking to us about not getting in trouble, not doing bad things, and just, you know, and the impact they have. But he was about 3 years too late, because Cocky had already came to Bowman Elementary, so they already had me. So I was already a Gideon Cock fan, because Cocky came to Bowman Elementary. But because of that, I'm like, wow, I think back at it now, and I was like, the impact that I made is because I can visually remember going to the cafeteria, them bringing you in, you sitting at the front and speaking to us and telling us what we can be and what we can do. And the impact, so you, when I say you was a legend on off the field, you was making the impact then, and probably didn't know that, well, if I did, you were a kid too, so you 19, right, 19, 20.
I'm a weird kid.
And you don't even know the impact you making on these kids, because we got kids that, I know some kids that actually went to Clemson because of that. Mm. Like, for a fact, went to Clemson University, because you know, for kids, once you get an impact,
yeah,
it got you. They went to Clemson University because of that. Mm-hmm. And a few finished, a few didn't finish because of circumstances, but they still went.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we're here. So we can give you your flowers while you're here.
I like flowers, yeah. But that's the thing. I'm like I said, it's like a car that comes off the assembly line. When that car comes off the assembly line, everything is in it so it can run and do what it needs to do. When that kid, when that child, when that it comes out their mother's womb, when they step into this world, they're already equipped with everything they're supposed to do. But so many times, they never realize it because their environment chokes it out. Well, not chokes it out of them.
Yep.
Presses it. And all it takes is, like you just said, somebody just come in and say something or speak to that thing on the inside of them, and it flickers a little bit, like, oh, what's that feeling? What is that? And now all of a sudden they're moved toward a different bent. So now it's like, I don't know if I want to go that way. That don't feel right no more. I like this feeling over here. Let me stick with this. Yep. Next thing you know, they're the ones coming back, pulling so many people out of the same situation, the circumstances they've been in. So, man, that's what it's about for me.
Man, I'm definitely glad. And like I said, I'm glad that now you're doing the speaking engagements. Because, like, I'll let you say whatever. I don't know, because I know, like I saw, I'm sure I read it right. I know you're doing speakers engagements, and you just, I had speaking life into people.
Yeah.
Right? Speaking life into people. And
My goal is to help individuals recognize, unlock, and walk in their God-given greatness all the days of their lives.
Okay. So, and if they wanted to meet you, if they would not meet you, if they wanted to contact you or see what you got going on, what would be, I'm going to let you start speak to the people, what would be the best way to, like, contact you or see what Woodrow has going on as far as your foundations and whatever his shit is going on?
Well, the easiest way, you know, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, on those two. So, I mean, on LinkedIn too. I don't know, a lot of people do LinkedIn, but I'm LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. You can find me on those three platforms. But I mean, if you want to start a dialogue, you want to bring me in, and you want me to come do something, the easiest way to do it is just shoot me an email. And it's info@dantzler3.com. That's info@dantzler, DantzlerIII.com. So info@dantzler3.com. But if you go on Facebook and you see some of my posts, that email is sitting right there.
Okay, guys, I'm going to let you know. Since we're going to be on YouTube, all this information for Mr. Dantzler, the email will be in the link above. And if you're watching this on YouTube, and if you are one of the great Clemson alumni, if you want to book Mr. Dantzler to come do a speaking venue at your prestigious event, wherever it's at, if you're on YouTube, look in the link below. Because I know whenever this year a Clemson hashtag and Woodrow Dantzler, they're going to check it out. So look at the link below. And I will make sure the information is in there so they'll be able to contact you. And you can spread this great message, because Woodrow, to be honest with you, this is my opinion, especially with all that's going on right now, I believe the NFL should be bringing you in behind closed doors to these NFL scouting meetings.
Working on it.
When they talk about diversity, because they need to have you there, because this is me. See, and I'm like, a blind man can see now, like, wow, we really dropped the ball on a great talent.
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to be the greatest talent scouts, but
hey, it all happened for a reason. And as I said, I'm totally content with how things are, because it put me in this place where I am right now, and I gotta say I'm in an awesome place. Awesome.
Man, and that's a blessing. We also want to send a shout out, because I know how these things go. I've been doing the interviews for a while. I want to give a shout out to Mrs. Dantzler, because I'm telling you, man, because I see how it goes when they get off the things and the guy say me, you didn't give my wife a shout out. So I want to give a shout out to Mrs. Dantzler and the family. I want to give a shout out to your nieces who always repping it, and they always show love. But hey, guys, Mr. Dan, do you have anything you want to say before we sign out?
Shoot. No, I appreciate you sharing your platform with me. I appreciate you reaching out, man. It's been awesome. Now I got a new friend for life, and you know I got your back. It's just a shout away. You need me.
Give me, man, and I appreciate you too, man, because, hey, let me tell you something. Y'all, the only thing I know about me, I'm a man with pride, but I said, you know what? I'm gonna sit at the man upstairs. What happened? I just happened to see a video that you pop up. I said, I'm gonna ask Woodrow would he mind doing an interview with me. And man, he said sure. And you guys loving it.
Make sure you let him know. I do respond. It be me. I respond.
He does respond. And he let me know. I said, okay, listen, because guys, you guys know me. I said, I'm going to be aggravating now. I'm going to send it. I'm going to leave him alone. Okay, he respond. Okay, be good. I'm going to send it. And I want to appreciate you, because, like I said, a lot of guys in the bird, especially former athletes, feel the same way I feel about you, because there's guys who we hold in high reverence, who when we play ball, we would see them come back to the gym and show the young guys love. And you guys were a beacon of hope, I guess, for a school like OW, and especially you was the biggest beacon of hope all along. I see Crawford Street over. Yes, guys, he's a Crawford Street legend also. My God, the Hill. They want to make sure I get.
Don't say the Hill now. You'll get me in trouble.
Okay, Crawford Street.
No, it was Crawford Street. Don't say.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the spot right there, man.
Well, man, I thank you. I'm not gonna hold you up. Tell your wife I appreciate her too. I appreciate everybody, because I know how family thing. I know how the family unit is right now, because they're probably on the other side of the camera looking at you right now. Like, all right, then, all right.
Listen, when I got out there, when I go back, because I came into the room. What you been doing in there all that time, baby? But nah, she's a blessing, man. She's one of my primary. I mean, she's one of the primary motivations for me. She's that one that pushed me to do stuff even when I don't feel like doing. Tell me the hard stuff when I don't want to hear it. You got to have those kind of people in your corner, man. She's the reason why I do a lot of my stuff. But, so,
man,
yeah.
That's a blessing, man. Hey, women, I know y'all on here. Y'all see I be hard on women. Well, all right, guys. Hey, this is the third interview that I've had a husband say that his wife is part of the motivation behind his success. So, women, all right, y'all leave me alone now. I done had three brothers on here.
You got to have your why.
You got to have your why. So, your why. All right.
I said, and your why not. You got to have your why and your why not. When you think about
it. You got that right.
That's right. Hey, no, I can't do that. Mm-mm. That doesn't look good. That's not the look, but yeah. But yeah, man, thank you, man. I appreciate this, man.
All right. Well, I appreciate you guys. This is episode 75 with the great, the Orange Bro 11, Woodrow Denzel III. Guys, thank you. If you hit that like, hit that share button, and see you guys next week with another episode. Keep tuning in. All right, with it, don't hang up.